Good morning, and welcome to Atheists Talk on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We appreciate you tuning in this morning. Today is Sunday, December 18th, 2016. I'm your host, Stephanie Zavan, and my guest today is Greta Christina, who braved the weather to come join us in studio. During this live show, we welcome your phone calls to 952-946-6205 and your emails to radio@minnesotaatheists.org. Just over a month ago, the world changed drastically for a lot of us, or at least the way we were able to think about it changed. For people of color, for immigrants, for people who can get pregnant, for LGBTQ people, for people who need health care, a Trump administration will look very, very different than a Clinton administration would have. Coming to grips with that isn't easy. Many of us aren't entirely there yet. Greta Christina, author of several books, including Why Are You Atheists So Angry?, Coming Out Atheist, and most recently The Way of the Heathen, spoke at Skepticon, conference in Missouri last month, about this new world in which we find ourselves. We invited her to join us this morning to continue the conversation. Good morning, Greta, and welcome to Atheists Talk.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
After all these appearances, it's very nice to have you in studio. So let's talk a little bit about your talk, at least to start with. One of the major themes of your talk, and really what you started with, was grief and the fact that people are grieving the outcome of the election and that they're right to do so. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I mean, I gave that talk just, I think, 4 days after the election results had come in, and many people, almost everybody I knew, was just in shock. And, you know, I was looking at what is this experience? And it very much was grief. We had lost something. We had lost something very big. And a lot of what we had lost was, the way I'm looking at it is that we lost the world. We lost the world that we live in now, and we lost the world that we were working towards and that we were hoping to build in the future. And there's a degree to which the world we lost was an illusion. A lot of people, and I'll include myself in that category, were under some illusions about whether things were okay in the United States. But not all of it was illusion. People who say, oh, Democrats, Republicans, they're all the same. I think we're going to be seeing very dramatically how different Democrats and Republicans can be in the coming years, and how radically they can change our lives. And one of the ways that I put it when I was speaking is that ordinarily when we're grieving, you know, you sink into your – when you're grieving just like a person dying, you sink into your grief, and then when you're ready to get over it – when you're ready to move forward, you know, because you never really get over grief, but when you're ready to move forward, the world is there to come back to. What do you do when what you're grieving is the loss of the world?
So you mentioned that a lot of what many of us were grieving was illusion. And I have seen people suggest that that makes our grief less valid. Like, we should have known better, and therefore we don't, I guess, have a right to grieve. Do you have any response to that?
Oh, many. Some of which I can't say on the radio. I mean, some of my response is, it's a little absurd to say you should have known when essentially every pollster was saying the election was going to come out the other way. You know, and They were in virtually no doubt. You know, they were very, very, you know, the pollsters were very, very certain. And I don't think it's unreasonable to say, of course I didn't know. It's like, you know, it's like people whose job it is to know these things didn't know. I think there's a certain amount of fairness, for instance, for black and brown people to say, are you really surprised at the degree to which horrible racism and white supremacy is powerful in this country, to the degree that, you know, a way that I put it was that white people are setting the world on fire so that black and brown people can't have any part of it. Because the world's going to be worse for a lot of people. The world's going to be worse for pretty much everybody except for the handful of people at the top. And I think it's fair for black and brown people to say, we've been saying this for a while. I think it's fair for women to say, we've been saying for a while just how bad extreme misogyny and extreme sexism is, and how powerful a force that can be, and how much it can shape public life. There's a certain amount of fairness to say that, but grief is grief. And if even if what you're grieving is, I didn't know and now I know, that's always, you know, there, I can think of hundreds of examples of times when, you know, I didn't know that somebody I was close to was terrible and now I know. Well, that's a form of grief. And, you know, you have to let go of your relationship with that person and you have to let go of what you thought about them. And that's a lot of what grief is it's your brain adjusting to the world without the thing that you've lost. And whether that's an illusion or whether that's something that is really there that was lost. And again, I think that some of what we lost was our illusions, but some of what we lost is a future that would have been much better, a future that we were building towards. And at the best case scenario, I think, is that we're going to be spending years undoing the damage that's going to be done in the coming years. And the worst case scenario is like some really permanent damage is going to be done in terms of climate change, in terms of global destabilization. You know, and there are people who are going to die because of this. You know, there are people who are going to be the victims of hate crimes. There's been a massive upsurge in hate crimes since the election. People who are going to die because they don't have health care. People who are going to die because they couldn't get legal abortions and so they got illegal ones. You know, people are going to die, and those people, even if somehow miraculously we make everything, you know, we get a Democratic Congress in 2 years and a Democratic president in four, those things can't be undone.
To bring it back a little bit to illusion, one of the things you mentioned in your talk that a lot of us lost was hope, which in some ways is an illusion and in some ways is something that's very important for going forward.
Mm-hmm. And that's such a complicated question is, you know, there's a degree to which hope is always an illusion because the thing you're hoping for rarely comes out the way that you plan it, the way that you dream it, the way you expect it. And I don't mean that we've lost all hope. You know, I don't think, you know, I'm not here today saying give up in despair. I don't think that. But a lot of the things that we had hoped for, we're not going to get, or at least at the best case scenario, we're not going to get for a very long time. And, you know, a lot of the momentum that we had been building over the recent years, we've lost. And, you know, and yes, there's a degree to which, again, you, especially if you're trying to build a better world, you're never going to get the world that you really want because people are people. And people are difficult. We're all difficult. but that doesn't mean that having to completely rescale your sense of what you're working for. And for me, it's like, you know, I had been working for there's real improvement we're going to be making. You know, there's and now it's like what I'm working towards is trying to make things less horrible. And I have some hope that we can make things less horrible. I have real hope that, you know, resistance is not futile. It is effective, and we can talk about that later. But, you know, the hope that we can make things somewhat less awful, that we can reduce the harm that's going to be done, that's a very different kind of hope from the hope that we can build new things, that we can, you know, that we can really significantly improve our lives and the lives of our neighbors and friends and family.
You also talked during your talk about loss of the work that we've done, and you've mentioned that, you know, we had momentum that we don't have anymore. I also found, because I speak to a lot of activists, that a lot of people, myself included, were having to spend some time figuring out and facing the possibility, whatever they decided, that the things that they had been doing were all the wrong things.
I'm not going to say the wrong things, but we're going to have to shift priorities, definitely. I agree with that. That, you know, it's like, you know, I'm a atheist activist. That's a lot of the work that I do is building, working in atheist communities and the organized atheist movement. And I can't build up any kind of outrage at this point about, oh no, there's a Ten Commandments statue in City Hall. And I don't like that. And I think that that's a real problem. And it is a symbol of this larger problem, which is that, you know, people, you know, the religious right has a stranglehold in this country. But, you know, when I look at, you know, people who are going to be targeted with hate crimes, people who are going to be deported, people who are going to lose health care, people who are going to lose access to reproductive control, trans people who are going to lose the ability to control their lives. I think that we need to shift some of our priorities. And I think a lot of people are looking at that, you know, that – and I think that it's fine when the world is okay to work on these, or more or less okay, to work on what you're passionate about. But we're going to have to change our priorities.
All right. Please stay with us through the break, and we will return to Atheists Talk with our guest, Greta Christina. I'm Stephanie Zavan, and you're listening to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Welcome back to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. This is Atheists Talk, and I'm your host, Stephanie Zavan. This is a live show, and we welcome questions at 952-946-6205 or emailed to radio@minnesotaatheists.org. Atheists Talk is an unusual show. Very few places in the U.S. can someone randomly turn on commercial radio and hear a bunch of atheists talking about topics that interest them. Increasing our visibility this way does have costs, however, and we need your help. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation to our radio fund, please visit minnesotaatheists.org. Today's guest is Greta Christina, and we are talking about this new world in which we find ourselves post-election. Welcome back, Greta.
Thank you so much for having me.
So before we went to break, we were talking about activists reevaluating what we had been doing, figuring out both what had been useful and kind of what we need to do going forward. So I would actually like to talk to you a little bit about godless perverts. First of all, and most of our listening audience will have no idea what that is. So can you tell us what godless perverts started out to be?
Sure. Godless perverts is an organization that I co-founded and co-organized. It's a small local organization in San Francisco. We have been around for almost 5 years, actually. And until pretty recently, what we have mostly done is performance events, you know, so putting on shows, and having to do with atheism and sexuality, basically. That's what we're about, is we promote a positive view of sexuality without religion. And what we had mostly done was performance events and social meetups, you know, and we'd have discussions and we'd have game nights and we'd have just chat sessions. And sometimes our discussions were on, you know, pretty serious political topics. But basically it was social support. And after the election, my co-organizer, Chris Hall, and I said, okay, we need to shift our focus, or we need to at least consider shifting our focus. And we had a meetup that was on the topic of participating in a resistance movement. And some of what we were doing was kind of testing the waters. Does our community want to do this, or do we want to just kind of keep doing what we've been doing? And that can be a form of activism, and it can be a form of resistance, just providing social support. But do we want to do more?
And actually, I would like to interrupt you at that point, because one of the other things that you did at Skepticon, on a panel you were on art and activism, was you made a case for pleasure as activism, embracing pleasure under even very difficult circumstances.
Absolutely. I think pleasure, if you are in a resistance movement, pleasure is very much a form of resistance. It's a form of self-care, and taking care of ourselves keeps us strong so that we can resist, and it helps us take care of each other. And that keeps each other strong, and it forms bonds. And also, just if your pleasure is what's being oppressed, if you know, you're, for instance, just to pick an example completely at random, if what you're resisting is the religious right and their idea that our bodies belong to God and don't belong to us and we don't have the right to do with them what we want, pleasure is a form of resistance. And so it was entirely possible that godless perverts would have gone on just doing what we were doing, doing these performance events, doing social support, having fun together. But Chris and I said we need to at least consider the possibility of doing more activism. And we had a meetup, and I was kind of on tenterhooks. I was like, oh my gosh, is like anybody going to show up to this? Is this just completely this pipe dream of mine? And it was, as far as I can tell, the biggest meetup we've had. And we're a small community, so that doesn't necessarily, it doesn't mean like, oh my gosh, there were 200 people there. We're a small community, but it was the biggest meetup we had, and everybody was there, was saying, was like ready to work and talking about, okay, what, essentially the meetup was about, what are you most worried about? What can we just as individuals do? And what can this particular community do? And we're still looking at that because it's a small community, and it's one of the things that any individual or community has to do when you're doing resistance work is take a careful look at what are your resources really? You know, what are you really capable of doing? You know, and overreaching can be as big a cause of ineffectiveness as underreaching. But yeah, it looks like we're going to be doing some different kinds of work. There's not much point in announcing San Francisco events on Minnesota radio, but I do think that those of us who are appalled and frightened, and I think we all need to be appalled and frightened because, you know, we're all going to be, it's, you know, it's, we're all going to be suffering. You know, there's some people who are going to be suffering more than others. There are some people who are more in danger than others. Obviously, immigrants, black and brown people, anybody who can get pregnant, lots of, you know, anybody who relies on the ACA for their health care. A lot of people, but anybody who drives on roads is going to be experiencing problems if there's this terrible infrastructure plan goes through. Anybody who relies on a basically stable economy is going to be in trouble if the global economy radically destabilizes. Anybody who just exists in the world and breathes air and drinks water is going to be in trouble if there's a significant uptick in global warming or if it just continues unchecked. So everybody's going to be suffering, some of us more than others. And those of us who are really concerned about that and want to take action, we were talking earlier about we're going to need to shift some focus. You know, we may need to let go of some of our beloved issues because they really just aren't as important as some other things. You know, I used to say, just do whatever form of activism inspires you. And now I'm kind of saying, you know, yeah, but look, I think we need to really, that to some extent was a luxury. And I think we need to look at what is really needed and look at what advantages do we have? What privileges do we have? What luxuries and comforts do we have that we can leverage to try to resist the new regime?
And in our next segment, I do want to get more into what kinds of things resistance looks like. But I know that the talk about setting priorities, and particularly priorities on, for example, church-state separation issues versus other issues, is a perpetual fight and has been within the secular movement. But I also wanted to note that this is one of those things where our major organizations within the secular movement are themselves reassessing their priorities at the moment. For example, the Center for Inquiry, about the time we all showed up at Skepticon, the chair of their board, Eddie Tabash, who does not usually communicate on CFI's behalf, put out a statement responding to the election and talking about the dangers of fascism, really. And, yeah, and that's unprecedented for an organization like CFI. So the fact that many of us who have said perhaps we should have more humanist priorities are saying, you know, we need to really focus on some of this, that's not just business as usual.
No, it's definitely not.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm reassured that some of the work we've been doing is effective.
Right. We'll come back to that after commercial. So please stay with us through the break, and we will return to Atheists Talk with our guest Greta Christina. This is Stephanie Zavan, and you're listening to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Welcome back to Atheists Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm your host, Stephanie Zavan. Atheists Talk is produced with funding from the Minnesota Atheists, the Humanists of Minnesota, American Atheists, Farmers Insurance Agent Georgia Hancock Tsui, and Cucumbers Restaurant. If you'd like to advertise on this program, please contact us at radio@minnesotaatheists.org. The music for our show is composed by member Brent Michael Davids. If you have a question or comment on today's show, please call us at 952-946-6205 or email to radio@minnesotaatheists.org. Greta Christina is with us this morning talking about what we can do to resist the problems of the upcoming administration. Not even
fascism. Let's call it fascism.
Let's call it fascism.
What can we do to resist fascism?
One of the things about your talk that I found particularly helpful was that it was talking about the way that resistance doesn't look like, for example, our movies from World War II. You know, it isn't necessarily going out and blowing something up, in part because at this point we're not actually in a war situation. We talked about that a little bit, talking about godless perverts and pleasure as an act of resistance. What are some of the other major ways that we can resist that we probably don't give ourselves enough credit for?
Well, certainly calling representatives, calling, writing, emailing our representatives. Something that has been very encouraging to me is, you know, this may just be my bubble, but if it is, it's a pretty big bubble, and I don't think it's just my bubble, is the degree to which people have been really stepping up and calling the representatives on the huge number of issues that have been raised, you know, whether it's terrible cabinet appointments, whether it's trying to get a recount, whether it's, you know, trying to get the Electoral College postponed. And it's, you know, the Americans are kind of famously not very politically engaged for the most part. And I've been very struck by the degree to which it's just been this groundswell of, you know, people being, you know, people with social anxiety, people with phone anxiety, people who really do not like to pick up the phone, have been steeling themselves to do it. And so that's, you know, that is certainly, you know, a major one. I think that in the coming weeks and months and years, you know, activism is going to take a lot of different forms. And it's true, it doesn't always look like, you know, and resistance is going to take a lot of forms. And it doesn't always look like, you know, it's like, you know, blowing up Nazi headquarters or, you know, stealing the plans, you know, in the dark of night. It's, you know, often it's boring. Often it's uncomfortable. And I do think that one of the things we really need to do is, I used to say, do whatever form of activism you're interested in, do whatever excites you. And now I'm kind of saying, do what you can. You know, don't do things that are unsafe for you, unless, you know, if we really get down to it, some people may need to do some things that are dangerous, but don't do things that are unsafe for you. But, you know, we need to do some things that are uncomfortable. We need to learn how to do things we're not yet good at. You know, we need to, you know, sometimes resistance looks like just driving 9 hours because somebody needs an abortion and they can't get it in their state. You know, it looks like not going to the fancy restaurant and donating that money to Black Lives Matter or to the Transgender Law Center or to somebody else who's doing on the ground work, supporting the people who are in the most danger. You know, it looks like, you know, opening up your home to, you know, to people who need shelter. You know, and even if, okay, now your home is a little crowded because, a lot of people need shelter. You know, it looks like, learning how to lobby. It looks like learning how to do, more direct action, you know, more street activism. You know, resistance takes a lot of forms. Sometimes it just looks like speaking up. You know, when people say terrible things, when your family says terrible things, when your coworkers say terrible things, speak up against racism, against misogyny, against xenophobic hatred of immigrants. And again, don't do it if you're really going to be unsafe. If doing that means you're going to get kicked out of your home or you're really going to lose your job. But if it's just uncomfortable and, you know, the consequences you're worried about are that you're going to have some kind of strained relationships, I think we need to look at doing that anyway. You know, because we're in it now. This is going to be very rough. This is going to be a very rough few years. And we need to step up our game. And that means learning how to do things, you know, we're not good at. You know, the ways that I've been doing that have been, I'm not always great at calling my representatives, and I'm doing that a lot more now. Amanda Kniff has a great book called The Citizen Lobbyist that I've been reading.
Yes.
And I'm learning how, I'm terrified of lobbying, but I'm going to do that. And, you know, this community activism that I'm doing, you know, shifting the community that I'm in from being social support, to taking a more activist role. I don't know how to do that. I have no idea how to do that, and I'm going to have to learn on the fly.
You also made a point that sometimes activism looks like really, really basic everyday stuff. Do you want to address that a bit?
Sure. I mean, you know, activism, I mean, for one thing, self-care is activism, and taking care of each other is activism. You know, just staying alive, you know, and staying strong is activism. And that's actually something that I've also been looking at. I'm not always good at, for instance, taking care of my health. And I'm looking at this now and going, I need to take care of my health. And if I'm not good at doing it for myself, I feel like I need to do it for this coming movement. Sometimes it looks like donating money to Planned Parenthood, you know, that's, you know, maybe stepping up your donation a little. You know, it can look like, you know, just really just being decent to each other. You know, it's taking care of each other. You know, I think that's one thing you know, if you're just stuck with what can I do? Something you can do is if somebody who you know is doing this kind of work is struggling, you know, reach out to them. You know, there's make somebody dinner who's having a hard time. You know, sometimes, you know, resistance work is really as basic as that. And sometimes it really is. It's like you have your checklist. It's like every day I call a representative. Every day I have a conversation on social media. Every day I, you know, make a $5 donation to a new organization.
All right. We do have a phone call. We have Byron in Plymouth. Byron, you had a question about Trump?
Yes. Well, I think in 2003, there was an article in Free Inquiry magazine, and it was called The 14 Characteristics of Fascism by a guy by the name of Lawrence Britt, L-A-U, that kind of Lawrence, rather than a W. Anyway, I'm not going to go through these things. I hate people who read things over the phone. looking at his 14 characteristics of fascism, this guy had studied several fascist systems. and you take a look at what's happening today, I'm reminded of a guy by the name of Carl Radek, someone that Stalin put in the gulag on and off until they killed him. And one of the comments that Carl Radek, that I remember anyway, was that fascism is the iron hoop around the collapsing barrel of capitalism. And I sort of think right now that our Trumpster is sort of a dress rehearsal for a Mussolini. He's not smart enough to be a Mussolini.
Did you have a question for Greta?
What's that?
Did you have a question for Greta?
Yeah, the question is, I'd like her to comment on this, because it looks to me as though we're heading down to, in the hell of a handbasket, and although I don't believe in hell, I am in my geezer hood, and I got kids, and I got grandkids, and I'm very worried about them. Far more than anything else, I'm actually extremely fearful of genuine fascism.
Someone following Trump. So Greta, I think you've been pretty clear that what we are facing is fascism.
What we're facing is fascism. And there's this a little bit of a boy who cried wolf situation, which is that, you know, progressives and liberals love to toss around the word fascism. And I will call myself on that as well. And, you know, we've been saying, you know, Reagan was a fascist and Nixon was a fascist. And they had some fascistic tendencies. But people, sociologists and historians, political scientists who study actual fascist regimes, they tend to look at progressives who call everything that they don't like fascistic and roll their eyes, and they are not rolling their eyes now. You know, historians, sociologists, political scientists are saying, yes, this is what fascism looks like. This is not hyperbole. This is not hysteria. This is what it looks like. And it's easy to overlook, because one of the characteristics of fascism is that it dials up gradually. You know, it dials up the repression, it dials up the restrictions, it dials up the hatred, it dials up the violence, gradually. So, and I'm blanking on the person's name. Somebody had this very good, piece about this, about how, you know, it's like they're testing the waters. You know, it's like an abuser, you know, sort of testing to see what can they get away with. And it's one of the reasons why it is so important to resist everything and to resist now. And people may be like, you know, okay, fine, I called my representative about the Electoral College and I called my representatives about the recount, and nothing happened. You know, the recount was pathetic, and, you know, the Electoral College happened anyway and Trump happened anyway. But the fact that people have been rising up against it in such large numbers, I think is very powerful. I think that it says we are actually not going to accept this.
All right. Unfortunately, we are really out of time to discuss that. I do want to let folks know that Greta is in town to speak tonight at the Solstice Dinner. You can find out more about that on the Minnesota Atheists Meetup page on meetup.com. Dinner is all spoken for, but entertainment, including Greta, starts at 7 p.m., and you can still show up and get in for that. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Also, by the way, you can find Greta on a regular basis at the Orbit Network. She has her wonderful Greta Christina's blog there. So I'd like to thank our audience for tuning in to Atheists Talk. This is Stephanie Zavan, your host. Join us again next Sunday. Right now, stay tuned for American Atheists Viewpoint. I am proud to be on the air with Minnesota Atheists, and I hope that you appreciate the show. The show does depend on the generous support of our members, our sponsors, and our donors. Please consider supporting the show through the donation link at minnesotaatheists.org. This is Atheists Talk on AM 950, KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. The podcast for the show will be on our radio page later today.
Hello, and welcome to the American Atheist Viewpoint for Sunday, December 18th, 2016. I'm Nick Fish, the National Program Director for American Atheists, and thank you, as always, for joining us. We are coming up on the holiday season, so I want to wish everyone a happy holidays. If you don't hear from us next week, it is because we are celebrating the upcoming holidays. in that spirit, in the spirit of wrapping up the year, getting to a place where we're finalizing all the things that we have to do before the new year, I want to start things off this time by just reminding everyone that if you do support the work of American Atheists, if you do support our work in the courts and in Washington, D.C., and in raising visibility in the media and through programs like Atheist Voter and all that, if you support that work, please consider making a year-end tax-deductible donation today. We rely on the people who support our work. We're talking, you know, $10, $20, $50 at a time. We rely on that type of support to make literally all of our work possible. There aren't people, there aren't, you know, big, giant grant-giving organizations giving grants to protect the separation of religion from government or raise the profile of atheists. In fact, many corporations who match their employees' giving have an issue matching the gifts to American Atheists because for no other reason than the fact that we raise the profile of atheists, and they for some reason view that as a religious thing, where, you know, obviously that's not the case. We fill out all the same forms everyone else does. We're not a faith-based organization. We follow all the disclosures that every other secular nonprofit organization does, so it's a little bit ridiculous, and it's just, you know, an example of the sort of thing that we have to deal with constantly. So if you're in a position to make a year-end tax-deductible contribution, again, you don't have to break the bank. We want as many people joining as members and joining as supporters as possible because it raises the profile of this organization and this community. When we walk into a member of Congress and say, you know, we have 10, 20, 30,000 people who have made an investment in this movement and in this community and in this mission of protecting the separation of religion from government, that's going to be important as we go into the new year and start working with an administration and with a Congress that are, you know, more hostile to the position of church-state separation and the vision of a secular government that we have staked out and that our mission requires us to advocate for. What we're doing moving into this new year is looking at how we can be most effective in the Trump era and in the era of a government led by people who have expressed, if not outright disdain, then certainly hostility to the position that the government shouldn't be giving special treatment to religious groups in general, or to religious positions or to religious public policy. We're going to have our work cut out for us. If you go to our website and view the location of Barnes & Noble bookstores where our magazine is available, or go online and read it on our website, the cover story for this magazine that just came out for fourth quarter that will be on the shelves through the beginning of the new year talks about the challenges we're going to face in the federal court system. This isn't just about the Supreme Court. It's not just about filling Antonin Scalia's seat. It's about the hundreds and hundreds of federal judgeships that Donald Trump will have the opportunity to fill over the course of the next 2 and 4 years. Those courts are the courts that can impact your day-to-day life and will deal with and resolve many more cases than the Supreme Court ever will. In the last year, there have been more than 100 bills proposed across dozens, almost all 50 states, that have sought to carve out exemptions for religious beliefs from applicable civil rights law, carve out exemptions that would allow health providers to deny serving LGBT people, to allow businesses to refuse to serve LGBT people or single mothers or any number of other groups if it's done on the basis of sincerely held religious beliefs. You know, it's not just places like you know, Alabama or Mississippi, we're talking about places like Michigan, where I'm from. We're talking about places where you don't typically see this sort of thing, but it's happening all throughout this country, and there's no sign of that letting up. What we need to do for the next 2-4 years is going to be working at the grassroots level, at getting our state and local affiliates involved, to keep an eye on this legislation, to do trainings, to do workshops, to bring people together, to build coalitions, to oppose the types of laws that we've been seeing proposed over the last year, and that are only going to come more frequently. We're working with folks from the Coalition for Liberty and Justice, which is started by Catholics for Choice, among a few other groups, which is a broad base of faith groups as well as secular groups, all working together to protect the real definition of religious liberty, the real definition of religious freedom, which is it's used as a shield from government action, not as a sword to impose your particular views on religion on everyone else, which is unfortunately the view that's being staked out by many of our opponents. We have no shortage of work to do for the next year, in the coming weeks. We have Religious Freedom Day that's coming up. It's actually the same day as Martin Luther King Jr. Day this year. Keep an eye out for things the week before that. We have nomination fights that will be coming up for many of the positions that we've discussed on this in this segment previously. So Jeff Sessions, Betsy DeVos, Tom Price, the Health and Human Services nominee, people whose positions are fundamentally opposed to ours when it comes to issues of whether the government should be funding religious schools, in the case of Betsy DeVos, whether requiring that insurance companies cover contraception is an affront to religious liberty, as Tom Price has said, and where exactly he draws the line there. Is requiring insurance companies to cover anything at all an affront to the religious liberty of groups like Christian Scientists or mental health screenings to the religious liberty of Scientologists? These are questions that these nominees will have to answer for and that the Trump administration is going to have to answer for. The fight is just beginning. We have so much work to do, and I want to thank everyone who has taken the time and takes the time each week to listen in on this and takes the time to support American Atheists. We couldn't do what we do without your help. And whether you agree with every single position we take or not, we're thrilled to have you on our side when we find common ground, and that's what this is all about. So once again, thank you so much for joining us for this week's edition of the American Atheist Viewpoint and for your support. For more information or to make that year-end tax-deductible donation, please visit our website, www.atheists.org. Keep an eye on our website because a new version will be launching in the new year. And the last thing to mention, as always, is that we do have a donor match going on right now where if you become a monthly donor, we will get your donation matched dollar for dollar for the first year. You can learn more about that at atheists.org/monthly. Thank you, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.